Good morning. Welcome to Turfgrass Epistemology. My name is Travis Shaddix. Glad you all could join me today. This is the first members only stream that I've tried to do with chat working. So for those members who may be watching this after the fact and missed it, just don't forget that I post the link in the community tab, the members only section of the community tab. You just click on community tab, and if you're a member, you'll see it all. If you're not a member, you won't be able to see that particular post. So it looks like it's working. I see chat, see Connecticut Cubanican and Andrew Burris and Looney and Transition Zone Guy. And so I'm keeping my fingers crossed that I'm doing it correctly. So we'll see how this goes. I have made some adjustments to the audio and video, and I'm hoping that it's working. I noticed there might be a few little kinks in the system. So if you don't mind, just kind of let me know there, if the audio and video don't exactly sync up, then I'll adjust it between now and the next show. But I don't know what I'm doing, so I'll try my best. I did several tests, and it looked like the audio and video might not be exactly synced up, but if that's the case, I'll just make some adjustments. But yeah, I wasn't real happy with the way the video was looking. It didn't really look like I wanted it to look, so I made some adjustments, and we're going to try this, and hopefully it works. If it doesn't, then, you know, we'll go to plan B. I tried it months ago, and there was actually a major problem with the syncing. And hopefully this is better. I may have to step out just for about 2 minutes. I have a delivery being dropped off in my driveway, and he just texted me. So if he knocks on my door, I'll have to take a break. And just 1 or 2 minutes, I got to run outside and show him where to drop it off. But welcome. Turfgrass epistemology. How do we know what we know about turfgrass science? A true solipsist would say we don't know anything. We can't know anything for 100% sure other than that we exist, right? But we can get close to it. I don't know if I'd consider myself a complete solipsist, but we can certainly get very close to knowing things about turfgrass science. But the best way to get there, in my opinion, is to review the scientific literature and use that as a means to guide us, and use that as a means to develop good reasons and management practices. So that's what we do here on Turfgrass Epistemology. We're growing. We're getting about 300 new subscribers a month, 200 or 300 right now. It was early on like 5 a month, 10. I did 2 or 3 shows here with no one. Sat here and did one or two or three shows, and there was no one here. And now there's quite a few. I'm happy to help. I think on Thursday night we had again the highest viewers 2 weeks ago on Thursday night, and then this last Thursday night again we had the highest again. So so we're growing. So good morning to Looney, David Peters, Super TA. Connecticut Cubanican, it says, I am a member of several Facebook lawn care group chats, including a group called the Lawn Care Nut. The Lawn Care Nut, Alyssa Hain, will often answer questions posted by members of the group. Okay, well, good. I don't know Alyssa, but hope it's useful. Hope it's accurate. Yeah, so there was, Looney says he remembers those early days and caught one on episode 4. Yeah, I don't remember. You can go back and look at those early shows, and I can't remember who was the first person to pop in. It was either Looney or Super TA or Aldo, or I can't remember. But there was really no one watching. It's kind of peculiar doing it with no one here, but it is nice to see chat. It really does. It kind of reinforces that there's people watching, and it helps me kind of keep keep flowing well and so forth. So I do enjoy seeing some chat. It can just reinforces that there's people watching and helps. Connecticut Cubanican says 99% of my answers are videos from my channel. I'm shocked I haven't been booted from his group. Oh, the Facebook group? Maybe. I don't know. Oh, Alan Hain. Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that was a typo. I'm sorry. I guess it was a typo. Yeah. Yeah, honestly, when I started this channel, I didn't know. I didn't realize that there was such a footprint in the lawn care community on YouTube. I didn't watch YouTube for lawn care stuff. I don't watch YouTube for lawn care stuff now. So when I started, there was some initial, but there was just, eventually I was just surprised. I've spread across all the lawn care, the turfgrass industries, lawn care and sod and golf and sport turf, but primarily historically I've been primarily in golf. And I was doing it thinking that there'd be golf people watching and so forth. I didn't realize there's so many lawn care people on here. And since I've been doing this, I guess I've been getting in everybody's algorithms, or they're getting in my algorithm or whatever. And I get a lot of turfgrass videos and lawn care, and some of them are okay. Some of them are trying their best and they just don't realize it, and that's okay. But it's the people who do realize what they're saying is untrue. Those are the people that worry me. They don't really care. They're just trying to sell something. That's fine, but if they don't care, if the information they're giving is not true, that's not good. Okay, I have an extra show scheduled for this Wednesday at noon. It'll be open to the public, and it's always subject to change. Those extra shows are always subject to change, but I'm pretty certain that we're going to be able to do it at noon on this Wednesday, 12 o'clock noon Eastern time on Wednesday. So assuming all that goes and everything works, then, you know, look forward to that. And I'll have a link posted in the normal, that's in the normal video link. But please keep in mind that, and in this particular case, it's very likely, or not likely, but it's just very possible that there may be a link go up and then I might have to cancel it, or I may not be able to do it. But but please be aware that Wednesday at noon, I'm planning on having another show. And then, of course, we'll do the normal Thursday night show. Okay, let's get into it. There is an ongoing, this particular topic has been around since at least the late 70s, okay? This topic of microbial inoculants. This month we're going over biostimulants, and sort of a subset of biostimulants are microbial inoculants. So what are microbial inoculants? Microbial inoculants are essentially bugs in a jug that are applied to the soil, the turf or soil, watered into the soil. And they're intended to impart some benefit on the turf grass by either extending the root surface area or growing more roots or absorbing more nutrients, or in some cases, fixing nitrogen from the air. There's all sorts of claims of these microbial inoculants. And occasionally you will see a paper that shows there's a quote unquote benefit. And usually it's in reference to roots. But usually you'll see those results in a very clean environment, like in a lab or in a greenhouse. It's not particularly common, although I'll show you a couple of them. There's several, but it's not particularly common to see research conducted with microbial inoculants on turf grass in the field. Okay, that's not overly common. It's more common to see the more controlled environments. And in those controlled environments, there's some hit and miss. There's occasionally some papers that you'll see some benefits. But keep in mind when you're reviewing these products, or if you choose to go into the literature and look into some evidence to support them or to refute them, keep in mind, are you looking at the means to the end, or are you looking at the end? Okay, the end is some desired outcome: turf quality, turf color, turf growth, fall retention of color, spring green up, whatever you or your clientele are interested in. The means to that end are things like nutrients in the tissue or increased root growth or increased antioxidant accumulation in the leaf or something like that. Okay. So I'm not saying the means wouldn't eventually result in the end, but oftentimes we will find that there will be a mean that is shown to increase, i.e. roots, that do not result in the end, i.e. turf quality or color. And today's paper is an example of that. Okay, so keep clear what our goal is. Our goal is to produce an acceptable product to our clientele, whatever acceptable quality limit or whatever threshold that is, that's our goal. So when we get into the world of biostimulants and microbial inoculants, manufacturers and distributors and marketing personnel, they love to merge the means with the ends to convince you to use it. When in reality, I'm not overly interested in the means. I'm interested in the end first, and then I'm going to use the means to that end as an opportunity to explain how the end occurred. Okay. I want to make sure that's clear, because it's very easy to go down these roads. I'm looking at this, I'm looking at roots, I'm looking at antioxidants, I'm looking at all these things. And before you know it, you're convinced to use it. Meanwhile, when you look at the end, you're like, wait a second, all that increased, but none of it resulted in what I'm looking for. Okay. Keep that in mind as you go through this literature. Okay, so the title, and by the way, I have several videos. There's a new video out on a YouTube channel, and it's only been out a week or so, and it's on this exact product. On the active ingredient is Azospirillium brasiliensis, but it's 15 minutes long, and it's very boring, honestly. But in that video from a major manufacturer in the United States, primarily Eastern Coast, but they're nationwide now. They're talking about how the inclusion of this particular product, Azospirillium, is going to increase root growth and going to basically change the world, right? And the argument in their video, basically not the argument, but their position is, well, ours is unique and different because of the manner in which we deliver it to the system. We're keeping it basically vacuum sealed in bags, and then we're adding water to it, and they grow, and then we apply them. And because we do that, therefore, it's going to result in the desired outcome compared to other research that didn't do that. That's called special pleading, okay? Don't believe it unless you see some literature on it, okay? What they'll do is they'll show literature. They'll show, not literature, they'll show a study that was conducted by some, you know, ABC professor in a state university somewhere. And they'll show these pictures, you know, roots growing all over creation, you know? And all that may be absolutely true. I'm not saying it's not true. But I'm not convinced, because what they're showing you is not in the published literature. And if it's not in the published literature, they can do whatever they want to with it. They can take treatments out, put treatments in. They can not show all the studies that didn't show a response and just show the studies that did show a response. They can do all sorts of stuff with that to convince you. And so that's the reason I generally will just, not even generally, I pretty much ignore all that. And I look to the literature, okay? And the literature could be wrong. Could be. I'm not saying it's always right. I'm just saying that the chances or the likelihood of it being correct is greater than the chances of data on a marketing sheet being correct, okay? Or being valid, I should say. So if you're interested in finding information on this, like say microbial inoculants, you can just Google turfgrass microbial inoculants. Or you can Google turfgrass response to Azospirillium brasiliensis, and this article will pop up, okay? The article today is entitled, "The Impact of Commercially Available Microbial Inoculants on Bermuda Grass Establishment Aesthetics and Function." This was published in Crop, Forage, and Turfgrass Management in 2022 by Bolton Cabrera. I can't say this third author's name. Habtesalasi, Poston, and then Dr. Henry at Georgia, Gerald Henry. Okay, so I'm going to go through this fairly smoothly, I hope. Bermuda grass is one of the most widely used turfgrass species in the southeastern region of the United States. Tolerance to drought and heat make Bermuda grass a popular choice for home lawns, athletic fields, and golf courses. Okay. Fertilizers are costly and may negatively influence the environment when misapplied at excessive rates or by improper techniques. That's the key. So Dr. Henry was very good at I don't know, maybe this was his graduate student, Connor Bolton, I don't know. Maybe he wrote it or Dr. Henry wrote it, but that's exactly correct. Okay, fertilizers aren't going to apply to turf grass. Have extremely low risk of causing any environmental consequence. But it does when it's misapplied or applied at excessive rates or with improper techniques. That is true. And so when they say that in there, make sure that we completely read that sentence, because folks on the other side of the aisle will say, well, fertilizers are costly and may negatively influence the environment. It said it right here in the paper, right here. It says it. Yeah. Well, when misapplied at excessive rates or by improper techniques, that's true. But when it's applied correctly with proper techniques, it has extremely low chance of ever causing an environmental issue. Current turfgrass sustainability research has aimed to investigate alternatives to traditional nitrogen fertilizer applications in order to limit the negative environmental impacts. Biostimulants include an assortment of microbial and non-microbial products that are intended to enhance plant nutrition, establishment and growth, and stress tolerance. We're going to find that the stress tolerance issue is probably has the most support. Some of these other are questionable, but sometimes during stressful situations, heat or salt stress, the addition of a microbial, not a microbial product, but a biostimulant may be able to help you in those cases. We're going to find that eventually when I get to it. Previous research involving the incorporation of microbial biostimulants in turfgrass management systems has been limited and inconsistent. And that's the truth. that's definitely true. No problem, Brady 419. You're late, but you're here. No problem at all. Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for showing up. Although microbial inoculants are more widely adopted for use in horticulture and agronomic crops, several challenges exist regarding their use and efficacy, with some being more specific to turfgrass systems. I'm going to read pretty much this whole paragraph here, because I think it's important the way that it's used. Well, I'm reading this as a means to help contextualize the topic for today. Most commercial products contain foreign microorganisms that have difficulty competing with native populations acclimating to regional environmental conditions. Now, I had the pleasure of working with a microbial ecologist down in Fort Lauderdale, and I don't know anything about microbial ecology, but I was blown away with the level of knowledge necessary to understand some of these systems. Okay. I mean, it's crazy the amount of dynamics and the changes and things that go on in the soil in the world of microbial ecology. And what they're saying is that there's some microbes in the soil, well, all microbes in the soil right now where your lawn is, or your sport turf is, or your golf course is, or everything that's existing naturally is existing naturally for a reason. It has the environmental conditions necessary to support their growth. And when we apply foreign microbes to the soil, those microbes might not be suited to that environment, okay? And they have difficulty competing with the microbes that are already native to the soil. Okay. And that's what they're saying here in this paragraph. Turfgrass management inputs such as fertilizers, pesticides, and irrigation, as well as environmental issues such as turfgrass species and the soil profile composition, can select for more adaptive microbial communities that quickly outcompete introduced organisms. So they're setting the case. You have a very robust, firm, healthy population of microbes in the soil now, and you haven't done anything, you haven't added anything to it. And then you're going to go and add some more to it that are foreign to that environment. And they're basically saying that it's going to be difficult for those to grow, and they're providing citations for that assertion, okay? Previous research evaluating microbial inoculants in turfgrass has primarily focused on cool season turfgrass species, with the majority of research conducted in controlled environments, just like I mentioned at the beginning. Controlled environments being the lab or greenhouse. It's not that research in the lab or greenhouse is useless. That's not the case at all. But when we're looking at products to enhance our desired outcome in turfgrass systems, again, that's a stepwise progression to hopefully what will eventually become field research. And it's the field research that we have the least control over. It's the most expensive, but it's also the most relevant to what we would expect or predict to see in our own situation. Okay. Therefore, the objective of our research was to compare Bermudagrass establishment in a controlled environment and to determine the quality and function of a mature Bermudagrass stand in the field in response to commercially available microbial inoculants. Okay, so to set the stage, just so we're clear, microbial inoculants, the one that they're going to be using, I don't know if they explain it or not. I don't think they explain it a whole lot here, but the intent is to fix nitrogen out of the air in this particular case and increase the amount of nitrogen that would go into the plant by that means, okay? They're going to be using a couple of different microbial inoculants and a couple different application regimes. But the idea is that you could apply these microbes and either see greater quality because it's fixing more nitrogen, or it's resulting in greater root mass or root density so that the plant has a greater capacity to harvest nutrients from the soil. And you would either get greater quality or performance, or you can get the same with fewer inputs, being nitrogen or some other nutrient. Okay, that's the idea behind it. And then we've seen some of that, a little bit of that in the lab or in the greenhouses, which is basically what they're saying in the introduction. So let's get the materials and methods and describe exactly what they did. Trials were conducted in 2021 at Athens Turf Research Center and Education Center in Athens, Georgia, and at a residential lawn in Bogart, Georgia. Okay. Good morning, Gray Fox. So we're at the Research Center in Georgia. If you've never been to Athens, Georgia, the Research Center, I suggest you go there. It's a very good system, very good setup. As well as Tifton, Georgia. They have that's where a lot of the Tifways and Tif Eagles and all those Bermudagrass breeding things come from there. And they're doing it on a home lawn in Bogart, Georgia. And we're getting to the species, okay? Research at the Research Center was performed on a mature 5-year-old Tifway hybrid Bermudagrass mown at 2 inches. So we're on Tifway 419, 5 years old. I would consider that very mature. And it was mowed at 2 inches with a ride-on rotary mower. Whereas the research at the Bogart, Georgia on the lawn was conducted on 2-year-old Tifway hybrid Bermudagrass mown at 2 inches with a walk-behind rotary mower. By the way, this article is a practitioner's journal. So all the units should be English units, or most of them should be English units. And it should be fairly easy to follow relative to some of the other hardcore like scientific SI unit papers that I go over. And this is open access, so anybody can go download it from CropForge and Turfgrass Management. Labeled rates and carrier volumes of treatments were applied. So make sure we're clear. Labeled rates and carrier volumes were applied. So they might differ a little bit from product to product, but that was the labeled rate for that product. They were applied on July 5th, 2021 at the Research Center and July 21st, 2001 on the Bogart lawn, and included a single and sequential application of this Klebsiella verrucola, which is, they're going to denote it as Kleb 1, at an inoculant rate. I'm not going to go over the rates, but that's all in the label, 0.2 gallons per acre. And it had so many colony-forming units. Again, you can read all that. And a carrier volume of 321 gallons per acre. So that's a soil-applied product. 321 gallons per acre is pretty high. But that's what you need to get these in the soil. So, the first microbial inoculant is Klebsiella verrucola, just so for those listening, I want to know. And they applied it sequentially. So those are two different treatments. Okay. And now we get to the next one, which is gluconactobacter dizotrophicus. It's hard to say. Gluconactobacter. I'll call it that. They call it gluc. And they did the same thing. They applied it sequentially. And then we get to the Azospirillium brasiliensis, And they applied that at the labeled rate and the labeled carrier volume. And they did that as a single application, or they did it with sequential applications. Okay, the sequential applications were made 3 weeks after the initial treatment. A non-treated check was included for comparison. Okay, no fertilizer was applied to either site during the duration of the trial. So make sure that's clear. So they were probably normal nutrition up to July, and then they stopped the nutrition. They applied these products. And I'm going to show you the chart. I'm going to go over it a little bit more clearly exactly how they did it. And then they didn't apply any nutrients during the actual time frame, time span of the data collection. Turf grass color, turf grass quality, and NDVI, normalized difference vegetative index, were recorded at trial initiation and at 2, 6, and 8 weeks after treatment. Visual ratings of turf quality and color were on 1 to 9, with 6 as a minimum acceptable level. They also measured carbon dioxide flux, or photosynthesis, essentially using a LICOR, which is very common. In the greenhouse experiment, and it was conducted at the Research Center Greenhouse Complex in Athens, Georgia, during the summer of 2021. Okay, and it was on Sahara 2 common Bermuda grass. In the greenhouse experiment, 2 pots were established per treatment, per trial replication, in order to conduct a time-lapse destructive harvest at 3 and 6 weeks after seeding. 2 experimental runs were conducted simultaneously in separate greenhouses in a randomized complete block design with 5 replications. A stock solution of each microbial inoculant was prepared with distilled water in order to deliver the same 8 treatments as described previously for the greenhouse experiments. Okay, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to sum it up. What they did. Treatments receiving sequential applications were initiated on August 16th in the greenhouse 2021. The pots were immediately irrigated after inoculant application with approximately 0.1 inches of water to move the treatments into the soil profile, and non-treated check was included as well. The pots were destructively harvested at 3 and 6 weeks for roots and shoots. So we're in the field in Athens, Georgia on Bermuda grass. We're in the field on a home lawn in Bogart, Georgia, with Tifway Bermuda grass. And we're also in the greenhouse using destructive sampling for pots, for roots and shoots in the pots in the greenhouse. So there's 3 studies going on in the field at the research center, on a home lawn, and in the greenhouse. Okay, they go through the data analysis, and then we get to the results. Now, I was going to show these results in bar graphs. In fact, I have them in bar graphs. But there's so many that it's just easier for me to go through it in the tables, which is what I'm going to do. Experimental run, for those data nerds like myself in the audience, experimental run times treatment interaction for field trials were significant. Therefore, the data were not pooled across experimental runs, and the results for each location are presented separately. Significant differences in DVI were observed among treatments for 2 weeks after treatment. However, no microbial inoculant treatment resulted in statistically greater NDVI ratings than the non-treated check. So I'm just going to go to the table and read all the results in these tables. So what I've done is, on these tables in table 2, we are looking at, let me go to table 1 first. Table 1, we're looking at the NDVI, the turf color and turf quality at the second week after treatment, at the 6 week after treatment, at the 8 week after treatment applications. And this is at the research center in the field in the summer of 2021 in Athens, Georgia. Now over here on the left, the treatments, this is a little easier to see the treatments, what they did. They have a non-treated check, and then they have the Kleb microbial inoculant. You have to go back, and the Klebsiella microbial inoculant by itself, and then they have the same thing, the Klebsiella, and then 4 weeks later they did it again. So that's treatment 2. Then they have the Azospirillium, and then they have the Azospirillium applied 4 weeks after that. So they have the single and then the sequential, and the single and the sequential. Then they have the Klebsiella formulation number 2 by itself, and the Klebsiella formulation number 2 by itself, plus the 4 week after initiation treatment. Then they have the Gluconactobacter by itself, and the Gluconactobacter by itself plus 4 weeks after treatment. All right, that's the layout of the treatments, and they're going to compare these down in DVI. And what I've done here is that I've denoted, or I've included the LSD, which is in this case of NDVI and second week is 0.02. I've added that to the non-treated check. So if there's anything, this is easier to see than in bar graphs, to be frank. So if there's anything, the non-treated check, the NDVI on the non-treated check was 0.75 NDVI. So if you add 0.02, it's 0.77. So if there's anything 0.77 or less, then it was not greater than the non-treated check. It wasn't greater than doing nothing, essentially. And you'll look down through here, all the microbial inoculants at 2 weeks after application, none of them resulted in an NDVI rating greater than the non-treated check. Now, NDVI, for those of you who might not be familiar, it is a measure of, the easy way to think about it is, it's the natural green light reflectance. It's the reflectance of natural green light from a plant. That's the easiest way to kind of explain it, I guess. I don't put a whole lot of confidence or weight in NDVI, and I know a lot of people do that. They try to correlate NDVI with turf quality or turf color, and occasionally you'll see very strong correlations, but occasionally you won't. And so I would rather see turf color or turf quality than just NDVI. NDVI is completely objective, whereas turf color and turf quality, assuming color and quality weren't done by a light box, they're subjective. So there's a reason why some people don't put a lot of faith or confidence in turf quality and color, because it's subjective. But I would argue that turfgrass researchers who have been doing this for years and years and years have a very keen eye, and they're very consistent with the manner in which they do the ratings. However, some argue that we shouldn't be doing that, and they want an objective measurement of color or quality, and so they use NDVI. But I can show you many, many papers where NDVI does not correlate to turf color or turf quality, as there are many papers that show it does. So I'm just saying, I don't put a lot of confidence in it. But it does give you an idea relative to other plots that what the natural green light reflectance was. And in the case of 2 weeks after application, there was no microbial inoculant, either any treatment of the microbial inoculant, none of them resulted in greater NDVI than the non-treated turf. When we look at turf color at 2 weeks after and turf quality at 2 weeks after, this NS down here means that it's not significant. So nothing differed at all. So nothing differed from the non-treated check in turf color. Nothing differed from the non-treated check in turf quality 2 weeks after. When we go to 6 weeks after, nothing differed with NDVI. Nothing differed with turf color. And then you see this 0.03 with turf quality. And so I just added the 0.3 to the non-treated control. So it went from the non-treated control was 6.8. So I added it, and it's 7.1. So now all you have to do is go down here and see, is there anything that's greater than 7.1? And there's no treatment that resulted in a quality greater than 7.1. So that means that nothing resulted in a turf quality greater than the non-treated check at 6 weeks after treatment. And then you do the same thing down here on the 8 weeks after treatment. You see the NDVI was 0.03 LSD. And you add that to the non-treated check, which was 0.69. So now the difference indicator would be 0.72. So it has to be greater than 0.72 to differ. And we do see a 0.72, but it needs to be greater than 0.72, at least according to Gomez and Gomez, and which are agricultural statisticians. And we don't see anything greater than 0.72. So at 8 weeks, NDVI didn't differ. And then turf quality, nothing differed at 8 weeks. And turf color, nothing differed at 8 weeks. So in the field, in Athens, Georgia, on Bermuda grass, the application of all these products, microbial inoculants, whether it was this Klebsiella, whether it was Gluconobacter, or whether it was the Azospirillium, whether it was applied single or whether it was applied single with 4 weeks after application, none of it resulted in any difference relative to doing nothing at all. Okay. So that's in the field in Georgia, in Athens, Georgia. Now let's go to the carbon dioxide flux in the field, which is basically a measurement of photosynthesis. And you'll see, this was in the field. And you'll see the non-treated check here was 18, and this is micromoles per square meter per second. That's a measurement of the carbon dioxide flux. It's measurement of photosynthesis. But basically, for those who are interested, a LICOR is a extremely expensive instrument that measures the change in carbon dioxide in a chamber. And they use it with leaves and all sorts of stuff and corn and all these things. But in grass, we use a little chamber. We use a clear polycarbonate chamber and we put it on the turf grass, and there's an instrument above it, and it goes to this other instrument, and it just measures the change in carbon dioxide as the turf grass respires and converts carbon and respires oxygen. Okay. So that's what they're doing. They're putting a little chamber. The chambers differ, but they're usually like not pipes, but they're usually cylinders, or they can be squares, can be whatever. And that's what they're measuring. They're measuring the respiration, not only of the plant, but also of the microbes in the soil too. So got to have anyway, that's all detail you probably don't want to know about. But anyway, that's what they're doing here. And we noticed that when we add the LSD to the non-treated check was 18 micromoles per square meter per second. So we add 2.8 to that, and it's 20.8. And you'll see a 20.8 here, but it needs to be greater than 20.8. And we don't see anything increase the from non-treated. Now, there is a B here on non-treated check, and there's an A here on this CLEB 1 initial plus the 4 weeks after treatment. And I'm not sure what the A and B stands for relative to the LSD. I think they just put the lowercase letters here as a means to more easily identify which ones differ. But according to Gomez and Gomez, it needs to be greater than the LSD in order to differ. And let me just make sure I'm not fibbing to you. Hang on. So this is what I'm talking about. Gomez and Gomez, for those people who are really, really nerdy. Okay, let's see if I can get that in focus. I can't. The camera's not focusing. Anyway, this is what I'm talking about. Gomez and Gomez. It's the Statistical Procedures for Agricultural Research book. And on page 89, it says, for LSD, it says two treatments are declared significantly different at a prescribed level of significance if their difference exceeds the computed LSD value. Otherwise, they are not significantly different. So that's where I'm getting it from. I go, when it comes to statistics, I get in trouble real quick. So I rely upon statisticians, and whatever they say is what I go by. So I'm not sure exactly where they got the A's and B's here when they're not greater than the LSD. I'm not sure about that. I'd have to ask the authors. Anyway. So at 4 weeks after treatment, nothing differed from the non-treated check in carbon dioxide flux. At 4 weeks after treatment, again, nothing differed. Actually, NS, that means nothing differed in carbon dioxide flux. And at 8 weeks after treatment, we see that the maximum of the non-treated check with the LSD is 14.5, and we do see several that are greater than the non-treated. There's two. It's the Klebsiella applied once and then 4 weeks later, and it's the Azospirillium applied once. Both of them resulted in 15.4 and 15 micromoles per square meter per second, whereas the non-treated check resulted in 12.5. So this one area here is the one area where there was a benefit in terms of photosynthesis of carbon dioxide, carbon flux, when these two treatments were applied, but not from anything else. So once again, is that the means or is that the end? Okay, this to me is a means to an end. Maybe I'm wrong and you all can correct me, but I don't know of any end user, not being a homeowner or a golf pro or a coach or a player, who's ever asked, how much is my grass photosynthesizing, right? I believe that these researchers did this as a means to explain what they would see in turf quality and turf color and so forth. Okay, now I've done photosynthesis as well, and it's a means to explain what's going on. But it's not the end. It's the means to the end. And in this particular case, there was one point at 8 weeks after where there was a benefit or an increase following the application of two of these microbial inoculants compared to not applying them at all. Okay, so we're going to go to the Bogart location. In Bogart, this is the lawn. Okay, this is the home lawn in Bogart, Georgia, on Tifway Bermuda grass in Bogart, Georgia. 2 weeks after treatment, nothing differed at all with NDVI, with turf color, with turf quality. Nothing at 2 weeks. There was no benefit at all 2 weeks after treatment. When you go to 6 weeks after treatment, I've added the LSD here to the non-treated check, and you'll see nothing resulted in an increase of NDVI, increase of natural green reflectance of light at 6 weeks after treatment compared to the non-treated control. When we go to the turf color, we again see no benefit in turf color. When we go to turf quality, we again see no benefit in turf quality at 6 weeks after. When we go to 8 weeks after, there is no difference at all among any of them in NDVI. There is no treatment that resulted in a greater NDVI, I'm sorry, turf color, than the non-treated check. There's no treatment. There actually is one treatment right here, the azospirulline applied once, that resulted in a reduction in turf quality. I'm sorry, turf color. So one of the things we care about is turf color and turf quality. Excuse me. And in this case, we're seeing essentially nothing's happening. But the one time something does happen, the azospirulline resulted in a reduction in turf quality or turf color. Okay. And then you go to turf quality, and I'm not exactly sure how they're able to do this, but in turf quality in the 8 weeks after, the LSD is 0.1, and we see the non-treated check being 6.6, and all the other ones are 6.5, and they're lower than this. Now, this is 0.1. I don't think they differ, because it's 0.1 and it's within 0.1. So even if it was statistically different, you're never going to see a difference between 6.6 and 6.5 in the field. But in turf color, you might see a difference, a half a point. It went from 6.8 in the non-treated control to 6.3 using azospirulline once. It's a half a point. You might not, but you're getting close to being able to tell a difference. It's to see a reduction in color using the azospirulline here on this from 6.8 to 6.3 and on a lawn at 8 weeks after treatment in Bogart, Georgia. You certainly didn't see any benefit. That's for sure. There was no benefit. Let's look at the carbon dioxide flux in Bogart on the lawn, and we see again there was no treatment that resulted in increases in carbon dioxide or carbon flux or photosynthesis at 4 weeks after treatment, and there was no treatment that resulted in any difference at all among any treatments at 8 weeks after. Okay, so whether it's in the field on the research center in Athens, Georgia, or whether it's a home lawn in Bogart, Georgia, essentially nothing happened in turf color, in turf quality, NDVI, or photosynthesis, carbon flux. Essentially, nothing's happening at all. There was one little blip in carbon flux where some of the treatments resulted in a little bit of an increase, and there was one blip where the azospirulline resulted in a reduction in turf color. Okay. So, but I would say for the most part, nothing happened. When we go to the greenhouse now, we're going to be harvesting roots and shoots. Now, if you remember at the beginning, I mentioned there's a video now online, and there's several videos that talk about azospirulline, and they'll show you these photos of grasses next to them and no azospirulline, and then they increase the rates and so forth. And they show these, you know, profound increases in roots, okay? And I don't really care about that. One, because it's roots and it's a means to an end. But two, because it's on a marketing sheet by some company that has a vested interest in the outcome. So there's a conflict of interest there, and it wasn't published. So I don't know what was done. I don't know how it was done. I don't know if it was valid or not. So I don't really have much confidence in that at all. But what I do have some confidence in is what's published in the literature on roots. And so we can go here. We don't have to rely upon a marketing sheet that may or may not be true. We can go here and have greater confidence that this is actually accurate. And so when we go to table 5, which is the roots and shoot weight of the seeded Sahara 2 common Bermuda grass in the greenhouse in Georgia, we see I've added the LSD to the non-treated check to see if anything was greater than the non-treated check. And the roots in harvest, experimental run 1, harvest at 3 weeks afterwards. 3 weeks after, what is WAS? Weeks after seeding. So 3 weeks after seeding, we see the root content of the non-treated check was equivalent, or there was no treatment that resulted in greater roots than the non-treated check. None. And these are from products, microbial inoculants, that are supposed to increase roots. Okay. So 3 weeks after from seeding, nothing resulted in greater roots than non-treated check. 3 weeks after seeding, nothing resulted in more shoots than the non-treated check. 6 weeks after, in experimental run 1, I've added the LSD again to the non-treated check, and so we're looking for any numbers that are greater than 0.14, and we see no numbers are greater than 0.14. So that means on roots, on 6 weeks after and 3 weeks after, no microbial inoculant resulted in greater roots at 3 weeks or 6 weeks after seeding Sahara 2, Bermuda grass in Georgia on for roots. And then on shoots, we did see the same thing. 2.279 is the number we're looking for. Anything greater than that would mean that they it resulted in greater shoots. And we see no treatment resulted in greater shoots 6 weeks after an experimental run one. And then in experimental run two, it's real simple. There's NSs across the boards on roots and shoots at 3 weeks after and roots and shoots at 6 weeks after. So I'm going to read this couple of things at the very end here. But the short and skinny of it is, whether it's in the field in Georgia, in Athens, Georgia, or it's on a lawn in Athens, Georgia, or it's in the greenhouse looking at roots and shoots, the application of the Krebsiella varicola, the application of Azospirillium, or the application of the Gluconectobacter diazactotrophicus, whatever that's called, provided no benefit at all, essentially. None. And those aren't cheap. They're not free. If they're free, then go at it, you know. But if you're paying for them, and this, you're not finding, we're not finding any evidence in this paper at all that they're worth the money. Okay. So in the greenhouse, I'm going to sum this up, I think the conclusion. Oh, they, okay. In the greenhouse, they have a good little sentence here. It says microbial inoculant application did not consistently increase hybrid Bermuda grass NDVI, turf color, turf quality, carbon flux in the field, or common Bermuda grass root and shoot biomass in the greenhouse. That's pretty damning against those products. I love it when researchers just say that stuff because that's what they found. That's the result, right? They didn't consistently increase any of that. Okay. Now we're going to go to the very end, and it says many commercially available inoculants that exist for use in turf grass are not native to the locations where they are applied. Therefore, competition from indigenous microorganisms and intolerance to environmental conditions could reduce their potential for colonization and nitrogen fixation. So that's the end of the results section. And I'm not a microbial biologist, but the one or two that I've spoken with and one or two I've listened to, they more or less say the same thing, that you could be applying billions and billions of microbes per ounce, per fluid ounce of solution. And it's not that many compared to the number of microbes that are actually in the soil, but two, the microbes that are in those fluid ounces are not indigenous to the soil. And you're applying them in a situation that is already flooded with microbes, billions and billions and billions of microbes. Okay. There's as many as 10,000 species in a single gram, like a spoonful, as billions. And you're applying however many you think you're applying, which is barely a grain of salt in the ocean. It's just almost nothing. But even if it were a substantial amount, you're applying microbes that are not indigenous to the soil, and it's very possible that the microbes that are indigenous to the soil are more adapted to that environment and are going to survive better than foreign microbes that are going to be put in that don't have the ability to survive in that environment. And that's basically what they're saying in this study. They didn't measure that, but they're using that as a postulate as to explain why they didn't see anything. The conclusions in this paper are, maybe need a little bit of work. I mean, it's not a real strong conclusion from what they found, but I'll just read one sentence. Endemic microbial populations that have adapted to survive and proliferate in turf grass environments may outcompete non-endemic microorganisms recently introduced into the system. And you can read the rest of the conclusion, but the conclusion is not as specific as I would like to see it for this paper, but that's that. So the short and skinny of it is, if you're going to buy these products and you're going to apply them to the soil, there's not any evidence in this paper that you should do that. So it's not to say I won't show a paper eventually that does show there's some benefit, but usually when you see papers that show there's a benefit or some sort of perceived benefit, it's from laboratory studies or greenhouse studies. When you go out in the field, things change. It's hotter, it's colder, it's wetter, it's drier. people walking on it. There's animals out there. There's just all sorts of things going on out in the field that are real life, practical, applied, you know, variables that affect our results. Okay. So if we don't see responses in the field, it doesn't mean you won't see a response. But if we do see a response in the field, I have more confidence in that than I would in a greenhouse or a laboratory study. Okay, guys and gals. I hope that so that's it. So I hope the video and the audio synced well. I'm going to watch this back. And if it doesn't sync well, I'm going to change the AV stuff, flip it back the way it was. But I'm trying to get the viewers to have a better experience by providing a better quality product or better quality production. But if it's not synced, I know that's a little bit annoying. So I hope it is. And I'll watch it back and see how it goes. So Wednesday afternoon, I will, at noon, I will be on, hopefully. Okay. And then again on Thursday evening. Now on Thursday evening, it's funny because I can't remember who it was, but somebody put in a comment over the weekend. Have you looked at this study? I can't remember who it was. I apologize. It was one of the members. I know that. And I said, can you link it? And he did. He or she did. It happened to be one that I'm going to go over anyway. So it'll be a good one on Thursday. So look forward to that. And until then, guys, I hope you have a good week. I'll see you guys hopefully on Wednesday at noon. I'm going to leave you with some music and I will see you guys next time. All right, guys. Thanks. Bye.